I was not about to start wearing gray suits and wingtips. He pulled out a light blue seersucker suit, found a white shirt, then went straight for the tie rack, where he picked out the perfect red and gold striped bow tie.
"Let's try this," he announced when his selections were finished. "Over there," he said, pointing to a dressing room.
Thankfully, the store was empty. I had no choice. I gave up on the bow tie. Mitlow reached up and, in a skillful flourish, had it fixed in a second.
"Much better," he said, examining the finished product.
I looked at myself in the mirror for a long time. I wasn't sure, but then I was intrigued by the transformation. It gave me character and individuality. Whether I wanted it or not, the outfit was about to become mine. I had to wear it at least once. To top it off, he found a white Panama hat that fit nicely on my shaggy head. As he adjusted it here and there, he tugged at a patch of hair over my ear and said,
"Too much hair. You are a professional. Cut it."
He altered the slacks and jacket and pressed the shirt, and the following day I arrived to collect my new outfit. I planned to simply pick it up, take it home, then wait and wait until there was a slow day around town and wear it. I intended to walk straight to Mitlow's so he could see me in his creation. He, of course, had other plans. He insisted I try it on, and when I did, then insisted that I walk around the entire square to collect my compliments. "I'm really in a hurry," I said. Chancery Court was in session, and downtown was busy.
"I insist,"
he said dramatically, wagging the finger as if he would not negotiate for a second. He adjusted the hat, and the final prop was a long black cigar, which he cut, stuffed in my mouth, and lit with a match.
"A powerful image," he said proudly. "The town's only publisher. Now, off."
No one recognized me for the first half block. Two farmers in front of the feed store gave me a look, but then I didn't like the way they were dressed either. I felt like Harry Rex with the cigar. Mine was lit, though, and very strong. I sprinted by his office. Mrs. Gladys Wilkins ran her husband's insurance agency. She was about 40, very pretty, and always well-dressed. When she saw me, she stopped dead in her tracks, then said,
"Why, Willie Traynor, don't you look distinguished?"
"Thank you.
Sort of reminds me of Mark Twain."
I walked on feeling better. Two secretaries did double takes.
"Love that bow tie,"
one of them called to me. Mrs. Claire Ruth Seagrave stopped me and talked on and on about something I'd written months earlier and had forgotten. As she talked, she examined my suit and bow tie and hat and didn't even mind the cigar.
"You look quite handsome, Mr. Traynor,"
she said finally and seemed embarrassed by her candor. I walked slower and slower around the square and decided that Mitlow was right. I was a professional, a publisher, an important person in Clanton, even if I didn't feel too important, and a new image was in order. We'd have to find some weaker cigars, though. By the time I completed my tour of the square, I was dizzy and had to sit down. Mr. Mitlow ordered another blue seersucker and two light gray ones. He decided my wardrobe would not be dark like lawyers and bankers, but light and cool and a bit unconventional. He dedicated himself to finding me some unique bow ties and proper fabrics for the fall and winter. Within a month, Clanton was accustomed to having a new character around the square. I was getting noticed, especially by the opposite sex. Harry Rex laughed at me, but then his own outfits were comical. The ladies loved it.